everyone, and welcome back to Your World Through a Different Lens. I'm Faith.
And I'm Clint.
And we are happy to have you join us today as we begin to explore the different types of self-care in this series. Today, we're going to be talking about social self-care. We're going to jump right in, right? Just to remind you that self-care / restorative practices, right, as I like to call it, are not about simply taking a bubble bath every night when you get home. Now, that is a wonderful practice if that is something that you enjoy doing and it brings you a sense of peace and a sense of calmness. But that is not just what self-care is. It's not about maintenance or maintaining your baseline. It's about intentionally engaging in practices that recenter you and refill your cup, right? Because we can't pour from an empty cup, as so many of us try to do, self included. I know that I am guilty of not always engaging in self-care as often as I should, but I'm getting better, right? We're all a work in progress. So just kind of giving you an overview of where we're going. Today, we're going to be talking about social self-care and some things that we can do to kind of feel that piece of us that likes to connect with others. Because even if you're an introvert, right? Even if you're an introvert, there is still a need for connection. Introversion, right? We need to take that time to be alone and to kind of recenter and restore ourselves. But that doesn't mean that we don't like spending time with people. So relationships, right? Connecting with family, connecting with friends. Sometimes that's hard to do. What are your thoughts, Clint?
Well, I think you're going to talk a lot about that. I think social self-care and doing this is about all those things, connecting people, making sure you're doing those kinds of things, that you're not isolating yourself, that you are engaged and involved in activities with other people. And, you know, I think you'll take a lot of that and talk about a lot of that. What I want to talk about is kind of the opposite. Hey, when are we overwhelmed with those things? When are we doing that too much? Are we trying to help people too much? Are we trying to be engaged too much? Are we trying to make sure people are happy with us and we're doing all the right things? And if I say no to something, is somebody going to be mad at me or disappointed in me? So I think sometimes the opposite can happen, that we can be engaged too often and too much, that we're trying to make sure everybody's okay and everybody's happy. And so I want to talk about that side of it too, the side that says, hey, it's okay to set limits and boundaries. And I hate those words, but I like those words. I hate them because I think people throw them around for all kinds of things I don't think they mean. I think people also use them as the same definition, that limits and boundaries are the same things, and I don't think they're the same things at all. Mm-hmm. I think there are things that work together. They have different definitions and mean different things, but they work together. So I want to talk about those kinds of things is what I want to talk about.
I love that. And I think as we get into that, you'll give us a good definition of what limits and boundaries are. Because a lot of the things that we think about when we think about social self-care and engaging in social self-care activities, at the top of the list for a lot of people is connecting with their family, connecting with friends. You know, we sometimes can, especially in the South, right? And sure. I can speak from a regional perspective. I'm a Southern girl. I'm from Georgia. And I know, you know, the importance of family in our area. It's a cultural value. And regardless of what those relationships look like, a lot of times, regardless of whether they make us feel yucky or not, we are still expected to engage with our family. So for everyone, maybe a social self-care activity is to not engage with your family.
Well, sure. And you could have grown up in households that were abusive or emotionally not available or those kinds of things. And I think sometimes we grow up in those houses. It's not just an expectation. So like you're talking about maybe a family where, sure, it's the good old Southern family or the family, hey, we're supposed to do everything together. You're supposed to take care of me. You're supposed to be here for me. But mm-hmm. I think when people also grow up trying to take care of other people because they grew up in abusive households or in alcoholic households, or, hey, that was their role as a child, was I'm supposed to take care of everybody and everything. And, mm-hmm. hey, mom or dad's not available. They're gone all the time, or they're drunk on the couch. So I learned how to cook for everyone or clean or make sure my brother or sister get to practice or get to school. And so you grow up, become adults who think that you have to do that for everybody, mm-hmm. too, because it kind of becomes a coping skill. So not only, yeah, do we need to connect, but we need to connect in healthy ways. So, you know, I think you'll talk a lot about the ways to do that in healthy ways and how we can do that. And we can talk about that together. And we can also talk about when that's not healthy and it becomes mm-hmm. unhealthy.
And I think even as we start to have this conversation, a couple of things go through my mind, right? One, I consistently go back to that sociological perspective, right? And look at culture and traditions and rituals and how, you know, our social experiences impact who we become. And you always go back to, you know, the psychological piece, sure. and yeah. how those things interact. And I think that's beautiful, right? Mm-hmm. I love that. And then two, how those things, illustrate the complexities of self-care, right? Because it's not just as so many people like to imagine, black and white, right? I don't think that there is anything that is just strictly black and white, and social self-care is no different. But being aware of those things is really, really important so that you're able to make sure that you are fulfilling your individual needs, even in the context of our social world. Mm-hmm. So connecting with friends, connecting with families, making a phone call, but not engaging as consistently with those who would be an energy sucker.
Sure. Well, I think, yeah, the word I usually use in counseling with people is the word toxic.
Okay.
So what I mean by that, so we can just talk about that for a minute, is when I say toxic, and relationships can be toxic, is you have to set limits and boundaries with those relationships or those people. Because how I say to clients is, I say, I wouldn't sit in our room right here and open the window and let somebody lob some tear gas in here. That would make us sick. We'd get sick to our stomachs, throw up, cough, cry, all those kinds of things. You know, we want to get away from that. So what I kind of say is, yeah, some relationships are toxic because if you're interacting with that person and you walk away from those interactions angry, tired, frustrated, sick, upset, you know, that might be a toxic relationship and one you have to set limits and boundaries with. So, yeah, so we got to figure those things out too, because sometimes I think we get caught up in if I just work hard enough to make this person happy, they'll stop doing this with me, or I'll finally walk away happy or be okay or feel better. And the reality is you may not. You may have to set mm-hmm. some limits there. And again, we'll talk about that. But that's the word I usually use with people, is toxic.
Toxic. Mm-hmm. And so I think to add to that would be really important to consider is being aware of how you feel. Right, being mindful of what's going on in your body, right? Because you mentioned feeling some negative type of way, right? So what that feels like in your body. Do you get a headache sure. when you yeah. hung out with someone? Do you feel physically ill? Are you upset to your stomach? Like, all of these things, you have to really be focusing on what your experience of that is, yeah?
Yeah, certainly, of course. So you've got to be self-aware of those things for sure.
Okay.
So, and yeah, we'll talk about some of those things. So I think probably a good place to start is maybe you want to talk about some of the positive parts about connecting with family, or how we do that, or do you have ideas about how we do that and make sure that we're connected with family and friends and being socially connected, if we are introverts, or if we are yeah. tired of that, or we don't know how to do that?
Yeah.
What are some ideas about that?
So I think one of the easiest things you can do is make a phone call. Right. I know today most people would prefer to text. I know that I am guilty of it. My mother and I, we have a texting relationship most days, which is not terrible. Right. You know, she checks in on us. I check in on them. And we connect that way. But, you know, we need to be making a phone call. We need to have that sort of connection in that way. I know as a mama with a baby, and he's not a baby, I realize he's going to be 20 in just a few weeks. But I know that with him away at college, it's great when I get a text from him, but man, when I get a phone call, I cannot tell you what that does to my heart. He just gave me a phone call yesterday. And yeah, it was to tell me he needed something, but that's okay because I got to hear his voice and he did call me. So, you know, when we hear them say, you know, just give them a call, whoever that is, give them a call so that they can hear your voice. Connect with your friends, right? At work or at church or, you know, at the park or wherever you have your friends. Same thing goes with them, right? Connect. Set a date to go for coffee. Set a date for lunch.
We used to do that with your hiking group.
Absolutely, right? So that's great that you would bring that up because one of the things that you can do is plan social activities or start a group and invite people who may share an interest with you. This year I am, because I'm going to tell you, I'm just going to be very transparent. Social self-care is very hard for me, especially since COVID, right? So COVID has really had a negative impact on my social world. I have parents who are high risk. I myself am high risk. My husband, Clint, has developed AFib from being sick with COVID. I developed diabetes from being sick with COVID. And so we are very careful. And we do a whole lot less entertaining in our home than we did prior to COVID. So, you know, I think the last, the real last event that we had with family was our son's birthday just before lockdown in March of 2020. Only in the last 6 months, maybe, have we started having our family back into our home. And we have yet to have all of our friends over to have a dinner party like we once did. And so that has created, in some sense, some loneliness. And that makes it very challenging to connect. So with that in mind, and realizing the impact my lack of social self-care has had on me in a lot of different ways, I opted this year to start a new hiking club. Right? A hiking / walking club. And I invited a lot of friends to go with us. And it's very exciting, right? I've had several people join. But because the weather has turned on us here in the Peach State,
it's kind of hard to hike when it's 10
it is hard to hike. But I have had a lot of conversations on our group page on Facebook, and being able to connect with people in that way has really lifted my spirits, has brought me back into the social world, and made me recognize, you know, really the importance of social self-care. So there are a lot of things that you can do, and social self-care reduces loneliness. It reduces stress. Right? How many of us have to have a bad day at work? You know, when you got to call your work pal, your work BFF, and you're like, oh my God, I have to tell you something, right? That is part of social self-care, being able to vent to somebody, knowing that they get it and support you. Those are all really, really important pieces of social self-care. Book club. Any club, hobbies, anything like that. Date nights with your significant other. Mm-hmm. Clint and I talked a little bit about that. If you want to speak more on that, Clint.
What date nights? Well, I mean, our date nights usually are, I tell my clients when they talk about this, I say, you know, our date nights usually aren't dinner and a movie kind of thing. Our date nights are not usually even nights, probably. They're mornings, they're afternoons, they're probably we've been creative about that. They're morning breakfasts. They're going window shopping. They're riding around. there for me, date means that, you know, there are time set aside for us to talk and connect.
Intentionally.
And intentionally, right? To be alone and be together intentionally.
Away from everything.
Away from everything else going on. So dates don't necessarily mean, you know, dinner and a movie or going out or doing something like that. So that's really, I think, how we've done that over the course of years, is we just set aside times to be alone together. Yeah. And whatever that looks like.
And we're both really hard workers. Like, we are consistently, if we're not working at the office, then we are home and preparing for our podcast or, you know, learning and reading more research about ways to support the people that we serve. So it takes a lot of intentional effort for us. Not that I don't enjoy being with you or spending time with you. Right. It's just that I know there are a lot of other things pulling on our time. So this year, Clint said, you know what? This year we're going on a weekend trip, even if it's just to the mountains or if it's a hotel downtown, or, you know, it doesn't have to be anything extravagant, but we are going to be intentional on spending time together, making time to spend where we're not talking shop, where we're not, you know, researching and not having to take care of. Yeah. Of our animals.
Take care of our animals. Take care of everything else, house, everything going on, to be able to be away from everything. Just to not have to think about all the daily grind, just to be able to have some moments and times free to think about our life and what we want our life to look like in the future. I think that's part of dating, is talking about what you want your life to look like in the future. So yeah, that's what you can do. Mm. I mean, I try to go back to what you're saying, book clubs and those kind of things. Sometimes clients come to me and they don't know how to connect with people, and it seems like the only place you can connect with people is church and a bar.
Right.
You know? And that's what people say. And I usually say, no, there are plenty of places. I say, you do something, you find something you like to do. I'm sure there's a club or something available for that.
Mm-hmm. And if there's not, start one.
Well, if there's not, start one. Right. And how my example goes is, you know, I love to ride my bike. I said, so there's a bike shop in Hiram. I think there's a bike shop in Carrollton. And, you know, usually in the spring, summer, early fall, they have a group ride. Everybody meets on a Saturday morning or a Sunday morning, and they go ride. And if I really wanted to go have friends, I could go be a part of that. Because what would probably happen is the first time I went, I would just say hey to people and meet them, and we would all ride, and at the end I'd go home. But if I did that consistently, after a while, I'm probably going to have people that I know I'm talking to while we're riding. We're probably going to have other things in common other than bikes, because we're biking together. Not everything in common. At some point, I'm probably going to invite somebody to lunch, or they're going to invite me to lunch. So here's this growing community I have but I have to be intentional about that. I can't just go and ride and not speak to anybody. I have to be intentional about that. So whatever that is, I mean, book clubs, be a member of the High Museum and go down to their wine and whatever they have once a month, or those kinds of things.
Photography,
right? Mm-hmm. Or the place I refer people to, it sounds like a dating site, but it's not, is Meetup, meetup.com. It's affinity groups. People, you can find anything you want there. People go and eat dinner every weekend at weird little places, and you know, they meet for all kinds of things. Any kind of topic you think about, you can meet with. Now, the problem with that is there's most of it's all downtown and around downtown, so you're not going to find much outside the city. But you probably can, or you probably can start your own meetup outside the city. We did that for a while. Mm-hmm. We actually had you know, I think 4, 5, 6 people come for a consistent basis till we ended that. So, but yeah, those are the things you have to be intentional about. And yeah, you'll probably find healthy relationships that way, or hopefully healthy relationships that way.
That is really important, right? Healthy relationships. Because, yeah, we can enter into all of these social self-care activities and build relationships, get to know people in your community and connect with them on things that you have in common, right? But it's also about getting back to where you started earlier, right? Limits and boundaries.
Right.
Because we have to, social self-care may be self-defeating if we are not fostering and nurturing healthy relationship practices, right? To consistently say yes when you have no energy, and you do that out of a sense of whatever, right? Then that can become toxic.
Sure.
right? So you have to be self-aware and know what your limits and boundaries are.
Yeah. So how I talk about that, I'll introduce this now. Here, getting towards the end of this, of talking about these things. Let me introduce these ideas. And so one of the ways I think about that, what immediately comes to mind when you talk about that faith is sometimes people are passive. So I'll say passive people tend to tell themselves that some other person's needs are more important than my needs. Right. And so what tends to happen, this is a story I tell my clients. I say, well, so I explain these things. So if I'm a passive person and my best friend calls me, he's a therapist in Marietta. He calls me and says, oh, Clint, I totally forgot. I got to move my office just down the street. There's just a little bit of furniture. I just got to move my office. Hey, can you come help me? Well, if I'm a passive person, guess what I'm going to say?
Yeah,
I'm going to do that.
I'll be
there.
Right.
I'll be there because his needs are more important than mine. It doesn't matter if I had something going on or not. I'm going to tell him, yeah. Which is okay. We need to be telling people yes, and we need to sometimes set aside our needs to make sure other people are okay. That's something I know we need to do at times. But if I'm doing that, like you said,
a pattern.
Right. If it's a pattern, if it's all the time, if it's every time, typically what happens is I end up frustrated, resentful, sad, anxious, depressed. And as we're talking, this may be you. You find yourself this way because, hey, when do I get to say no? When do I get to ask for what I need? When do I get to rest? When is somebody going to recognize me? And unless you're really setting limits and boundaries, you probably aren't going to get that from people.
Mm-hmm.
So the second thing people do is we get passive aggressive. So I tell the same little silly story. Hey, he calls me. Same thing happens. He calls me and says, hey, can you come move my office? And on the phone, I say, yeah, sure, I can help you move your office. And I hang up the phone and I recognize, oh, dang, I told Faith where we're going to do this weekend. And I told Grayson where we're going to do this weekend. Man, I can't help him. But if I'm passive aggressive, I don't like conflict. And I don't want to have a conflict. And telling somebody no feels conflictual. So what I'm going to do is do something like just not show up. Or call them the day of and tell them I can't make it. Or I may show up late. Or I'll show up late and not really help. Or it's kind of my way to say no without having to really say no, which I tell people is the worst way to be people.
Mm-hmm.
Because I look untrustworthy and I look like I told somebody I was going to do something. Now I'm not doing, my friend's going to tell everybody,
man,
hey, don't trust Clint. I called him and he didn't show up. And I don't know what's going on with him.
Right?
Not dependable. And a lot of times when that's happening, some people are just passive aggressive. They don't want to manage conflict. So they avoid it because they don't know how to set limits and boundaries, which I'll talk about here at the end.
Mm-hmm.
The third way people are what we call aggressive. So people are really aggressive, which is the opposite of passive, which is, hey, my needs are more important than your needs. So my friend calls up, says the same thing, and what I do is I get mad at him. Why are you calling me? Can't believe you're calling me. I got this and this.
Right. I have so much going on.
Right,
you call
so
me all the time.
I got so much going on. Right. So that's aggressive. Not physically aggressive. It's just that, hey, my needs are more important, and I don't even care about what he needs. Now, the last way I want people to be is what we term assertive. So assertiveness is really just being able to recognize yours and somebody else's limits and boundaries. So how that conversation sounds like is, hey, he calls me and he asks the same question. And the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to recognize what he needs. I'm going to say that out loud. That's the first step here. Hey, I get it. You're busy and you forgot to call anybody and you really need somebody to help you. I get that. I understand that. Then I'm going to tell him what's going on with me. Hey, but Faith and I already have plans. And I told Grayson I'd come pick him up and do this. And hey, so that's the second step. And the third step is I'm going to tell him, so I'm going to make a decision or I'm going to set a limit. Hey, so I can't help you. Now, when I say that, a lot of times people are really passive in my office go, oh. And I say, oh, what? And they say, they're going to be mad at me. All right. So this is where we have to, and this is where I'll get to boundaries and limits. This is where we have to employ boundaries and limits. So let me talk about that just for a second. Boundaries, people, when I said this earlier in the podcast, people, I think, exchange these ideas, boundaries and limits, as the same thing, and they're not the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So they're things that work together. So again, I say boundaries for me are, so if you can envision for a moment, if I draw a circle around you and I draw a circle around me and we're standing in the room. So when I've done this with kids in school, sometimes you can take hula hoops and I put all the kids in a hula hoop. And I say, inside that hula hoop or your circle is who you are, what you like, what you don't like, what you believe, what you don't believe, what makes you happy, makes you angry, all the things that make you you. Same thing for me, same thing for somebody else. And this is the recognition of boundaries are the recognition of, hey, we're different people who see and think about the world in different ways. I say, if we're all standing in the room and the room is and the wall that we're all looking at is red, we're all looking at a red wall. We're all getting the same information through our eyes into our brain. But guess what? We're all going to argue about what shade of red that is. That's maroon. No, it's crimson. No, it's not. It's burgundy. No, it's like everybody's going to have a different idea about that. Which in psychology is what we call perception. So we all get the same information, but we have different perceptions. Mm-hmm. And this is what boundaries are, is recognition of, oh, you may see and think about something differently than me. So limits are when these boundaries start to cross. So if you can envision your head, I tell the kids at school to walk around their hula hoops. Well, what are little kids going to do, or any kid's going to do, walking around their hula hoops, right? They're going to crash them into each other or cross them over as they stand in the back of them, right? They're going to do silly things like that with them. And I say, yeah, this is what we call not keeping good limits about our boundaries. Because, hey, if my friend gets upset and angry because I can't come help him and I'm going to change what I'm doing to make sure he's okay, that means I just crossed the limit. I'm taking responsibility for something that's not my responsibility. Mm-hmm. The boundary is I can recognize he needs somebody. It doesn't always mean I have to do that. Mm-hmm. And I can recognize the limit is it's also not my responsibility to always fix that. So that's the simplest explanation I can give here on the podcast. Mm-hmm. So hopefully that makes sense. Does that make sense to you, Faith, as you sit here and hear me talk about that?
Yeah. Yeah. And as you talk, and I'm thinking about the relationships that we have with people in our lives and all of these various contexts, right? That can be in our family relationships, our friend relationships, that can be our work relationships, right? It kind of bleeds over into, you know, our emotional and mental self-care,
right?
Putting in place rules, if you will, about how we are going to engage in order to maintain my own mental health, my own emotional well-being.
Yes. So that's where I want to employ boundaries and limits. So I'm actually going to have this, when people are listening to this podcast, what you can do, I'm going to do a little video and a short podcast on Patreon. Mm-hmm. So you can go to patreon.com/yourworldthroughadifferentlens, and you will find us there. And if you become a member, you can have some exclusive content, and I'm going to cover kind of more specifically how are you really assertive? How can you do that? What are the steps to that? What are boundaries and limits really look like? How do I employ that? And then what you're talking about too, Faith, the specifics of how do I do that at work? How do I do that with friends? How do I do that with family? What's that actually look like? Because that can scare people. Mm-hmm. And I think it may be helpful to people see on a video what boundaries and limits look like, so I can kind of talk about that and give some things about that they can visually see. Mm-hmm. And also talk more about, hey, how do you, even when you're scared or worried that somebody's mad at you, how do you get through that? Because that's a process of also recognizing the limits of those things. Mm-hmm. And it takes some practice. So I don't expect people to hear this once or twice and go out and just do that and be fine with that.
Right.
That's kind of scary to do that. If you've been, spent your whole life being scared of doing that because, hey, my family, like you said in the beginning, our families, we're supposed to get together. We're family. We're supposed to do things for people. Or you grew up in a world where, yeah, maybe it was abusive or there was alcoholism or something going on and you felt like you had to do this for people. Mm-hmm. It can be really scary to step out on your own and to say, hey, I'm not going to do it that way anymore. Because the people around you may be really upset.
Absolutely.
And we're going to talk about that on the Patreon too.
And I think now would be a good time to remind our listeners, right, that although you are a therapist and I am a social worker, we are not your therapist social worker, right? So
sure, we see ourselves more right in this training to be coaches. We're kind of help coaching you through and help you think, oh, let me see if I can do some things differently.
Right. Provide some information, right? Some good background, some good starting points, right? We're never going to advise you to engage in anything that is not going to be good for you. You get to make those decisions about your life, certainly with the
information. And at some point you may want to find a therapist. So so as we wrap up, I'm going to let Faith kind of give through what we're going to do the next few episodes or give some ideas about what we're going to do, because it's not just about social self-care and taking care of ourselves. We're also going to talk about some other things in the few episodes coming. So what are those things going to be, Faith?
Absolutely. I'm so excited. Self-care is, I hope you can tell that we are passionate about that. And so coming up the next few weeks, we're going to be addressing physical self-care, right? The one that I know, I mean, you're going to find that I struggle with all of these areas of self-care. Physical is hard for me, right? Making sure that I'm eating nutritious food, making sure sure that I'm working out. So we're going to talk about physical self-care next week. Then we're going to talk about mental, emotional, and spiritual self-care, intellectual self-care, environmental self-care, and that I'm really excited about. That's not something that we hear too often about, but taking care of your environment and what that might look like and how that counts as self-care for each of us. And then we're going to wrap up with financial self-care. And we are truly looking forward to spending that time with you over the next few weeks, hearing back from you all. And until next week, Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you then.
Sure, we will talk to you then. And like I said, go over to our Patreon. You can see the membership levels, and if you want to be a part of that or not, love to have you over there. If you get the highest membership level, you can have some input into our podcast and what you want to see happen, the topics you want us to talk about that may be helpful.
And remember to view your world through a different lens.